Okay, today is Thursday, January the 14th, and I'm in Marion, Indiana. My name is Rick Bradley, and my guest today is Art Herring. Art, the first thing I want to talk about is the home run that Ruth hit off you. What do you remember about that?
Well, in 1930, I pitched against the Yankees, and Babe Ruth, he had him 2-0, and I threw him a couple of curveballs, had him 2-2, and I threw him a, got him 3-2, and I threw him a fastball outside the plate. It's like a slider, see, instead of, they call it a slider now, and George Blayholder showed White and I with the Detroit Tigers one time, showed how to throw a slider, just a nickel curve, we thought it. At that time, we was afraid to throw it because it wouldn't break very much. Well, anyway, I threw this slider outside the plate, about a foot outside Babe Hooded and Trumbull, Michigan Avenue.
A titanic clout, huh?
Yeah. And next day, Tommy and I went into the ballpark and we were signing signatures and everything, you know. And so there's a kid came up to Tommy and I and said, all right, I got the ball that Babe Ruth hit the home run off of you. I just thought he would just kid me and rip me, you know. And Tommy said, Art, he said, why don't you give him a couple of bucks and get the Babe and all the Yankees to sign that. And so I reached my bill for him. Didn't have anything but a $5 bill in 1930, that lot of money. And so I didn't know whether to give him that $5 bill or not. And I said, I don't believe you will, Tommy. You got any change? He said, well, I ain't got a $5 bill. So I gave him a $5 bill for it, and I went in into the Neil Conway, our clubhouse man, and asked him, would he take it over to the Yankees and get it signed? He went over and got Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Miller Huggins, Jumpin' Joe Dugan, Bob Musil, Pip Grass, and the whole Tony, they're all of them, you know, to sign that. And so that's a baseball I have now, and I've been offered a pretty good sum of money for it. Not only Babe Ruth and Miller Huggins, Tony Lazare and Jumpin' Joe Dugan, all that bunch, you see. And so it was a thrill to me to get to pitch to the Babe Ruth. But in spring training in 1929, I pitched against the Yankees in Oklahoma City. And boy, I couldn't believe how scared I was to pitch to the Yankees. And when Babe came to bat, my knees shook so that I couldn't hardly stand on the rubber. But you know, I got him 3-2, and I threw him a little curveball, a half-speed curveball, and he hit the ball to second baseman Jack Sauce gave her. And boy, I thought, gee, Willis got the mighty Babe Ruth out.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, Art, how'd you get started playing baseball? First team you're on, and
the first team I played on was Semipro. I played with Snyder, Oklahoma. Cecil Foster is a. We went to church. We used to go to church in the covered wagon. We lived about 2.5 miles from our church. And I was a pitching high school ball then, and I'd strike out anyway from 19 guys of 27th basemen. So Cecil Foster, he was a manager at Snyder, Oklahoma. And so he came and watched me pitch. My oldest brother would catch me. And he would, he said, I'd give you guys 7.5 for pitching and $5 for catching. And boy, we didn't have a job or anything. And boy, that was money in that damn time. Mm-hmm. And we'd slip off from church and go to Snyder, Oklahoma. We'd meet us down the road and we'd tell our folks we was going home with some of our friends. And we'd go pitch a ball game. My brother'd catch me. We got over there, and we're just pretty good ball players at that time, and nobody could beat us. And so, anyway, well, that's where I started. And but 1929, when I went to Oklahoma City, 1929, the end of the year, I went to Detroit Tigers, and Cecil Foster, he went to Detroit. Cecil Foster was smuggling across booze across the Detroit River from mm-hmm. Canada. And anyway, and I'd leave him passes on the gate. And so he was a millionaire. And I leave you passing on the gate, and he'd come in the clubhouse. And so Bucky Harris, our manager, said, "Artson, I really wouldn't, you know, that, how long have you known this guy?" And I said, "Oh, he's my first manager." And he said, "You know, I can't have him coming in the clubhouse anymore." And so, well, he showed me a picture one Sunday where he had a boat shot up, smuggling stuff across the Detroit River. And so I couldn't bring him in the clubhouse anymore, and I didn't know too much about it, and I couldn't believe that he'd do that. But every time we'd go someplace like Chicago, New York, and I'd see Cecil Laird, and he'd be driving a big Cadillac car, and he'd take Whitlow White and I out for dinner and everything, and pay for all of our foods and show us all the highlights of everything in New York, Chicago, and Cleveland and all. And that was something for us country boys to see. And so anyway, well, every time we'd go in Chicago, well, he'd be there. And one time he took us in after a ball game one evening. He asked us, "Want to go for a ride?" And we said, "Sure." And so I didn't know where we went, just to get away from the ballpark and everything, you know, and we was homesick and everything. And so took us for a ride. And so went into a gate. I don't know where it was. We took into a gate. So we had to take, I had a watch. We had watches in the pocket watches. And I went to Oklahoma. An Indian friend of mine sent me a watch fob. We wore pocket watches in, and everybody had a pocket watch. And so this Indian, he sent me, he beaded me a baseball and two bats and a glove on beads, you know. And he sent me a watch fob for that in beads that he had made. And I had to leave my watch end of this year as one that had the top over it, you know. You mash it and it opened up. And I had to leave it there at the gate. And we got inside. I couldn't imagine where we was going into. And we went in there, and Whitlow White punched me and said, "You know where we're at?" I said, "I don't have no idea." "No idea, Whitlow." He said, "I don't like the looks of this place." We went in there, and they had pool tables every place, every place. And I bet there's 500 pool tables. And everybody had a big white hat, and everybody dressed in black. We went over there, and Cecil Foster said, "Art, you see this guy over here that's shooting the pool now?" And said, "That's Al Capone." And I said, well, I knew who he was, heard about him, but to see him made goose pimples come all over me. Mm-hmm. And he's that one-eyed Connie over there. And I said, "Who is he?" But then we went in there, and Whitlow said, "All right, let's get out of here." He didn't know much about Foster, and I didn't either at that time. So anyway, we got out of there. But that was one of the things, my semi-pro time went in there. But my brother pitched at Lone Wolf, oldest brother. He was pitching semi-pro ball at Lone Wolf, Oklahoma. That is about 1927. And so anyway, he was pitching that Sunday, and so he got knocked out of the box. They was planning to go to Bohemian. And he got knocked out of the box, and so I had a little uniform on, you know, and just had tennis shoes on and didn't have spikes. I couldn't find any spikes there. It was larger. All the shoes that I, baseball shoes in, was too large for me. I got a small foot, 4.5 and 5 is what I wore. And so he said to the manager, said, "Roy," said, "why don't you let this kid, brother of mine, pitch?" Said, "He's been striking out all these kids, and he thinks he's pretty good." Well, he put me in, and I struck out 13 out of 14 in the mid-innings. They hired me. They gave me $300 a month. And that Lone Wolf, Oklahoma. And I went to high school, finished high school in 1923. And I played. I played until I got, well, Lone Wolf went to the tournaments. We won the Amarillo tournament, Denver Post tournament. Austin, Texas won that and finished second at Oklahoma City in the state tournament. Sandlot then. And so they wanted to sign me, but they'd only give me $300 a month. And so my hometown, Aldous, that's where I was born. Mm-hmm. And C.W. Steiner owned the Ford place there, and Mr. Graves owned the Ford dealership at Lone Wolf, Oklahoma. Somehow or another, they didn't like each other. And so Mr. Gray is when we played Aldous. Well, he went to Roy Dealer, manager, and said, why don't you give Arthur the ball and let him pitch today? And he said, well, I don't know. They got an awful good team. He said, I don't know whether I ought to start him or not. He said, he beat Mangum the last time he pitched, but he said, I don't know whether to start him against this good ball club or not. They had some good ball players. They had Quarterbum, Blackie Adams, and Dewey. And they had from the big cities. They went and got good ball players, you see. High-five ball players. So anyway, I pitched that game. I struck out 21 out of 27 men. And Mr. Gray, the Ford dealer in Norman, Oklahoma, said, Arthur, I'll give you $1 for every strikeout. Well, I got 21 silver dollars. And well, that's where I started. And I won 33 games, straight games, for Longworth, Oklahoma, Semi-Pro.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you're talking about Roy, the manager, and this gentleman with the Ford dealership. Was there a scout that eventually signed you?
Well, Ned Pettigrew signed me. Well, no, I went to Beaumont, Texas in 1928, and I signed a contract. If I didn't make the ball club, they released me, see. Because after I pitched that game at Snyder, C.W. Snyder came around the Ford dealer and says, Arthur, what are they paying you? And I said, $300 a month. Well, that's a lot of money for a kid. Mm-hmm. Nobody had any money. Depression, everything was wrong. And so he said, I'll give you $1,000 a month to pay for it. So when I went back to Longworth, I stand my brother at Longworth then, you see, and I went to the Onstott and Higgins and Happy McCarrot. They was the owners of the ball club then, financing it all. And I told them what C.W. Snyder had offered me, and he said, well, we'll give you that. I said, well, you got to give me more than that. He's offered that, and that'd be home down there. He said, we'll give you the pop session. And I'd make $100 every Sunday making pop, you know? Mm-hmm. So pop and lemonade and stuff. And so that's where I started in Longworth, Oklahoma.
What'd your family think about you picking baseball as a career?
Oh, they didn't like it. My father and mother, they were very religious, and nobody, they didn't like us boys playing Sunday ball. Never.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day my father told us after he found out what was doing over there, playing ball, and he said, listen, you boys, said, you know, I don't want you to play Sunday ball, but said, you know right from wrong. And he said, if you must do it, go ahead and do it. But he said, against my will.
Mm-hmm.
But we went ahead and played.
Just real quickly, you were talking about your three brothers. How far did any of the three of them get?
My youngest brother played in McAllen, Texas one time in semi-pro, the smallest one.
Mm-hmm.
But my oldest brother had the fastest ball I believe I've ever seen anybody pitch. But he wouldn't listen to anybody. He threw his curveball thumbs up where he could see it.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw in and just go in there, just go outside and come in. And one day at Umper, he was pitching a semi-pro ball game, and he threw a ball so hard he broke his elbow. And my brother, just older than I was, he was the largest boy in the bunch. Now, he could have made a really good ball player, the best ball player, as good a ball player as ever I've seen. I've seen a lot of them. He could catch. He could play short. He could pitch. He could do it all. I've seen him play every on the team and run. He could field. He was a good hitter. He could do it all. But he'd pitch every day for $5. His arm got like that, he couldn't throw.
Mm-hmm. Now, what other than pitching, did you play any other positions when you were growing up, or were you almost exclusively a pitcher?
No, I was a good hitter. I played the outfield, and when I wasn't pitching, I'd play third base and outfield.
Mm-hmm.
And when my brother just older than I was, he played third base. When he pitched or caught, well, I'd play third base to the outfield.
I want to start here. We'll go over this pretty quickly because there's some other stuff I'd really like to get into. But I'm going to kind of go year by year over where you've been and how kind of how you got there. Now, you're talking about Oklahoma City, and then the Tigers called you up, and then you were with the Tigers kind of off and on for, looks like, from 29 to 33. Mm-hmm. And spent a little bit of time in Beaumont, too. Why don't you tell me about those years?
Well, in 29, 30, well, my first big league ball game was against Boston, the Big Ed Marsh. I beat him 2-1 and drove in the winning run. And my second ball game was against Philadelphia, against Connie Mack's team. As he did Cochran, Fox, Simmons, Miller, Dykes, Boley, all that bunch, you know. Mm-hmm. And against Wahlberg. That's the first ball game that Rube Wahlberg had pitched. And my second ball game. And he beat me 2-1. And this umpire, I forget this umpire's name, but he umpired my game at Boston. And Mike Bellini showed me how to pitch. He worked with me this big Indian when I was pitching high school ball. He'd come to my ball games, you know, and he'd say to me, and he said, I call every pitch you throw. You hold a ball, fastball, this way, and a curveball, this way. You know, baseball's got two seams here and four here. You got to hold on the same, fastball, curve, everything, sliding all the same way. And you got a chance to go up. But he said, you got to hold all the same. And every high school ball game or semi-pro I'd pitch, he'd be there and he'd scout me. See, this old Linden had her way down to his hips, you know, and mm-hmm. he's the ugliest big guy. I was scared to death of him. But he helped me more than anything. Mm-hmm. I signed up with Oklahoma City. At Beaumont, they released me in Oklahoma City. I started Oklahoma City and when some ball about 19 ball game, something like that. But I played Lefty Liefeld. He was a Hall of Famer, a real good left-handed pitcher with the big league. He was my first manager. And I won my first 8 or 9 ball games. And I got beat, but Denver one time 1-0. I walked a man, and this center fielder hit a home run off of me. And I had to go to the ballpark the next day, and Lefty Liefeld said, base on balls. I only walked one man, base on balls. He drove me crazy, and I lived 150 miles from Oklahoma City. I got in a little ship down for it, and I drove 150 miles to Friendship, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. my home. And I jumped the ball club. See? Mm. I couldn't take that cussing and all. I scared to death of that man. He's about 6'6 and weighed about 240 pounds, and he'd get me out there, and he'd just point his finger at me and just everything, you know. I scared to death of the man. They had me sold to the Yankees for 3 ball players and $35,000 when I jumped the ball club. And when they come down there, they send a scout down there. And so, anyway, well, I was Friendship. I would go back. Finally, Ned Pettigrew, a scout, he signed me. He came down there and said they'd raise my salary, $75 a month if I'd go back. And I went back, and I won 19 and lose 13 or 14 ball games mm-hmm. and sold them. I went to Detroit that year. And 30... I think I'm winning 7 and lose about 10 or 12 or 13. I forget what it was. And a half a year. And I pitched against Feller, Grove, Earnshaw, all the good pitchers, West Farrell and all them, because White Hill and all the rest of them was working on a bonus. And one day in Detroit, well, they had the Bucky Harris, Roger Bresahan, Gene DeBuff, Hearing, White, White Hill, Yulee, right down the road. That pitcher's next to the little office there where mm-hmm. the manager's at. And I heard them talking, and so they said, well, I think White Hill, his left-hand pitcher, is supposed to pitch against the Yankees that day. And so anyway, well, after it's all over with, well, it started out, and I wasn't pitching. I wanted to pitch, but they wouldn't pitch me, you know. That day in time, you know, we had 5 or 6 good pitchers, and they'd go almost 9 innings. Us, the other guy didn't get to pitch hardly innings, you see. And so you can tell by looking on here, you know, I don't have many innings in there, you mm-hmm. see. And so that's the reason, see. And so when they started out, I said, Bucky, let me pitch today. And so I got to pitch. And so that's where I got to start, you see. But in 31, I forget. I mean, about what of that, but anyway, in 30, I believe it's 30. Yeah, They sent me over to Toronto, the International League, you see. I worked for Steve O'Neill over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over there, and it is a good league. I could pitch easier in the big league than I could in the International League. Boy, they had good hitters, and you didn't know how to pitch to them. But you know the funniest thing? Let me just tell you this.
Sure.
The funniest thing in baseball, I had a little black book in my pocket, you know, my baseball uniform on the field, you know. And they get to pitching, and I'd have all the hitters wrote down with us, a high ball hitter, low ball hitter, and they said, don't throw this guy a high ball, he needs to hit it out of the park. Well, I forget who it was, you know, all them people in there and everything, you know. I'd get back there, and these umpires would hit me out, you know. And it's a yard blow, you know, and tell me how to pitch to it. And that was a thrill.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to the second ball game of pitch now. Against Rube Hallberg, I got beat. And this umpire got me in Boston. And when I got through this ball game, Hallberg beat me 2-1. I walked about 8 or 9 men. And anyway, well, this guy that caught me in Boston, he said, Arthur, you're going to have a tough day today because this guy don't give you the corners. You got to go right in the middle of that. And I was a pitcher, not a thrower then. And so anyway, I got beat. After the ball game of Connie Mack, he had his scorecard. We had to go through the visiting dugout to get to our dugout, our clubhouse. So when I got through there, I noticed Mr. Mack waiting for me, you know. And so all the rest of the boys got in, and he said, Mr. Herring. And he said, I want to talk to you a minute. Went over there, and he said, boy, you just pitched a good ball game. He said, a good ball game. And he said, my, you had some good coaching someplace, somewhere. And I was scared to death to talk to him, but I just, I remember the words he told me. He said, Gleason, our coaches, and Blackburn couldn't get a sign off you, and somebody showed you down the ball. He said, you got a bright future ahead of you, young man. He said, I want you. Here, get ready, I want you.
Mm-hmm. Made you feel good, huh?
From Connie Mack, that was really something to hear from Connie Mack saying that to me.
You talked about your first day. Just one little thing I want to ask you about that. When you came up your first day, how was you treated? How were you treated by your teammates? Was it real cutthroat, or were they teammates happy to see you, or were you taking somebody's job? Or?
Well, I'll tell you this. I was the most embarrassing man that ever lived to go into the big league.
Tell me why.
In Chicago, I had an old tin suitcase. And some lady had a tin suitcase just like mine. We got in Chicago, all the porters had the suitcases out, you know, and they picked them up. This woman got my suitcase and I got hers.
Boy.
And when I got in Boston, Ray Hayworth, do you know him? Ray Hayworth, he was a catcher. They put me with Ray Hayworth. And, of course, I got there about right after the ball game. And so I had this lady's suitcase up there. Of course, I knew it was full of lady stuff. Didn't have nothing on just what I had on. No, nothing. And so anyway, well, Ray would have got for dinner. And I said, no, I'm just not hungry. And so anyway, I went out and bought me some clothes and the suitcase and everything, you see. I checked it in down there. I just aimed to take it up myself so that the porter went up, you see. Went up and see this. And so anyway, about 2 weeks later, I called a station master in Chicago. I told him there's a mix-up, my suitcases. And they traced it around. But we found a coat hanger in her. We tore her suitcase open. Mine was locked. I had a little key and locked it.
Mm-hmm.
And they tore mine open too. But I didn't have no address on there, and you didn't have nothing on the outside to identify you or anything. I tore it out and found a coat hanger from Altoona, Pennsylvania. And so that coat hanger found my suitcase, and I sent it her to come back. And I never did tell Ray that. It was much.
Probably a good idea.
Never told him. They sent me to Beaumont the latter part of the season. And Dale Maker was the manager down there. Greenberg was the first baseman. Pasek and Frank Rebert was their catchers. And Rabbit Benton was a second baseman, and Skeeter Newsom was shortstop. Rabbit Benton was a third baseman. We had Fritz, Easterly, and Pete Fox, and Taube in the left field. We got a. And And I went down to Dell down there, and we won the pennant that year. I won 11-5, I believe, down there, and we had Luke Hamlin, Sullivan, Goldstein. Luke Hamlin, Sullivan. Well, I can't name them right now. I'm in the pictures, but Schoolboy wrote a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. Pete Fox, all that. And we tied for the pennant. In the playoff, we played Dallas and Dale. And anyway, Chattanooga's we played the Dixie Series. We played Chattanooga. And I was a starting pitcher for the first ball game. And we had the nothing-to-nothing ball game, 8 innings. And I came to bat, and Dell Baker gave me the hit sign, 3-0. Clyde Barefoot, a no knuckleball pitcher, was pitching. And I was a pretty good hitter, and I liked about 6 inches hitting that ball out of the ballpark. Tooman was out, so I didn't score. But the ninth inning, Greenberg hit a home run to win the ball game, 1-0. It's the only ball game we won. And Chattanooga's beat four out of five straight. Mm-hmm.
Playing in Beaumont, tell me a little bit, if you can remember a little bit about the stadium, maybe where it was located. And then tell me about playing Beaumont, Texas in the summertime. Summertime sounds to me like it would be ungodly hot.
Let's don't talk about that. I don't want to talk about it. You know, I went down there, and Greenberg was a tremendous ball player. He could hit an inside ball over the plate. He hit a mob. And Greenberg got to talk to me, and he said, "Art, what do you think about me and hitting?" I said, "You'll never hit big league pitching because they'll pitch you outside. You can't pull that outside ball." And he said, "I can pitch anybody." I said, "When I pitch, I'll get out here, and I'll pitch outside the plate and show you. You can't hit it out of the ballpark." And he said, "I can." Well, I showed him he couldn't see. I pitched to him. He come out there in just a jock strap and a little pair of shorts, hot as it was. Mm. Talk about hot. I tell you, I drank about nearly a quart of buttermilk with 2 tablespoons full of salt in it. And I'd go out there and I'd run. I want to be a big leaguer. I want to go back up there. I want to play big league ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, well, I got in real good condition when I got back. But I had that heat. And the perspiration, your uniform, if you didn't drink that salt and buttermilk, you'd perspire and you'd be soaking wet. Now that salt and that buttermilk would keep you perspiring and hold that your strength to be in there, you see. And so, in the Texas League, we had Zeke Manure playing for Dallas and all the good hitters over there. They had Ripper Radcliffe and some good hitters there in Texas League. Possum Moore, Ted Gullick, Lynn Starty. Well, I think of them there. They're major leaguers in my book. Mm-hmm. They were terrific hitters. Of course, I was just a rookie then, but the thing about it is they could hit that ball as far as anybody could. And anyway, I got in condition, but I tell you, it was so hot down there. I was so glad to get out of there. I didn't know who I was.
Tell me how you went from the Tigers. I guess they sold you to Brooklyn. Is that what happened in 33? And
yes.
Tell me what happened there and what you thought about that.
Well, to get back to the big leagues, that was good. I played for Casey Stengel, you know. We had a good ball club. We had Lopez and Sukeworth catcher, Sam Leslie first, Tony Cuccinella second, Fry short, Joe Tripp third, Hack Wilson right, Cohen considered, Stevenson left. We had Mungo, Dazzy Vance. Gee, to be on the same ball club as Dazzy Vance was something. Tom Zachary from the Yankees. Owen Carroll. Whitlow Wyatt. That bunch, you know what I tell you. But had Otto Miller and Frazier as the coaching. But I didn't get to pitch much, you know. And the only time we get to pitch was a game that our good pitchers would get. They'd have a bad day and they'd get knocked out of the box, you see, and they'd have that rally on. Well, we'd get in there, you see. We'd put this in and we'd mop up, you know. Sometimes we got them out real good and sometimes we couldn't. But Casey Stengel was a rough guy to play for. Oh, he was rough.
Tell me how.
Oh, You never could. Well, let me tell you one time. We was in St. Louis one time, and Mickey Ewan was catching me in Brooklyn. Mickey Ewan was catching me, and we had Terry Moore at bat. And I'd got him out three out of four times, you see. I'd start that ball, you see, and I got him out three out of four times, you know. And I couldn't pitch anything away from him or curveball anything because he's a good hitter. Good hitter. And so I had to get him out, throwing slider inside, and bad ball's way away from him. He's going to hit my pitch, you see. Mm-hmm. And so the base is loaded. If he gets a base hit, he's in the ball game. And anyway, Mickey Owens came down, and Casey Steele come up there, and he said, "Art, make him hit a bad ball or walk him." Well, that threw my mind. I didn't know what to do. Casey was a tough guy to play for. Man, he's tough. Just like DeRozan. He's tough. And so I didn't know what to do. Mickey came down, you know, and I said, "Make him hit a bad ball, and yet don't walk him. How am I going to do that?" And I was up to make the ball club. I'm going to do what the manager said, but, you know, that is tough. Only I just didn't pitch. Here come Casey out there. Oh, what, cussing and everything, you know. And so I said, "Well, Casey, let me tell you this." I said, "You've got me all confused. Make him hit a bad ball, and yet don't walk him, and I've got him 3-2. See? See?" And I said, "Here's the ball you pitch." That's the only thing I knew to. I had to break the knob someplace because I couldn't pitch. I couldn't throw that ball. I was just shook up. And so anyway, he started the dugout, and he came back. He said, "Make him hit a curveball." And Mickey Owens says, "The best curveball ever throwed to right spot, blowing away from him. He hit a ball, line drive, right center, base hit. Ball game was over." Came in the clubhouse. Joseph said, Mungo lost the first ball game, 1-0. Everybody's mad because we was fighting for second place, you know, and there's in first. And so anyway, we come in the clubhouse, and Casey said, "Nobody dressed. Nobody do bit dressed. Just sat here. I want to find out what each one said, what's the matter with our ball club." And so sorry to Mungo. And he said, Mungo went to cussing, you know, and everything, and the ball, and the meeting was over. But boy, listen, they were two guys hard to play for.
Tell me how it went then from, let's go from the time you pitched for Brooklyn, and it was only part of that one season, and then you wound up with the White Sox. How did you go from Brooklyn in 34 to the White Sox in 39?
Well, I played with St. Paul 9 years in the American Association, see. And so I went on the coast. Brooklyn traded Johnny Fredericks and I to Bordegray. Johnny Fredericks and I to Sacramento for Bordegray. Brooklyn did. And so we went to Sacramento. And I won 20 games out there in 35 with a tail end ball club. They don't give me credit for it, but the last day of the season, I won my 20th ball game.
Yeah, because it says 19 and 14
yeah.
here.
Yeah, I won my. And I tell you what, I beat San Francisco 9 times that year when they had the Joe DiMaggio, Eckhart, Boss, all the good hitters. They had over 300 hitters on one ball club.
What kind of player was DiMaggio? Just to interrupt you. What kind of player was he then?
Well, he only hit 398. Oscar Eckhart hit 404.
Hmm.
And they come in there like Seattle and the rest of the clubs, and they'd see where I beat them, you know, and they'd say, come here. Truck hand another guy, you know, and say, "How do you pitch the Maggio?" I said, "Just get the ball over. Don't walk him." I wouldn't tell him. I pitched to him, make him hit my ball, or I take one chance on one pitch.
Mm-hmm.
One pitch, and I was lucky. And I'd say DiMaggio is great a hitter as he is. He is one of the best. Ted Williams is one of the best hitters I pitched to. Gary, I can just keep the name. Sisley, I'm just telling you. Fonseca, I just, Joe Judge, Sam Rice, I can just name you.
Mm-hmm.
Tame out there. That's a great hitter. But Joe DiMaggio, he didn't have any weakness. He threw the ball over that plate where he can reach it or get to it. But you had to cross him up. You had to knock him down this and everything. You had to be a pitcher. You had to have control of that ball. You had to be a master of it to pitch to them good hitters, any of them. And that's what that old Indian told me in Oklahoma. He said, you're going to learn to pitch, not a throw. You got to learn to pitch.
So that's, okay, that's 35 in Sacramento, and how did we get to, through St. Paul and then back up to the White Sox in 39? How did the White Sox get in?
Well, I had a good year. Rashin, I won 14 ball games and lose four, half of the season with St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry Bashin, and you just visited him.
Right.
And he and I was picked on the All-Star team to pitch in the All-Star game in 38. And so we won the pennant in 38, St. Paul did, you see. And so he was picked with two of the pitchers on the All-Star team. And I won, I think, 16, but I lost five. I had 14-4 the half of the season. I lost 5 1-0 ball games in a row on the road. Went back to Minneapolis, Minnesota, and pitched against Ted Williams, Buzz Aller, Spencer Harris in that little bandbox over there and got beat 12 innings, 2-1. And that was the sixth.
Mm-hmm.
That was some of my ball games. I should have won 20 or more ball games that year, you see. But that's just the way the ball bounces, see. Mm-hmm. But Ted Williams was, man, you couldn't pitch to him.
So did Chicago buy you from St. Paul? How did it work then? Did Chicago have some sort of working agreement with St. Paul at the time, or were they just said, we like Art Herring, and they just bought you?
No, they had a work agreement, see, with St. Paul, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Silvestri, Ollie Beamer, and I went to the White Sox in 39. And we went up there, and we trained in California and came back, and being on the same ball club with Teddy Lines and Luke Eplin and L.A. Bud, Joy Cool and Mike Kreese and Orton Lee, Goldtooth Brown, and oh, it was really something. But anyway, I didn't get to pitch up there. Because Frazier, he got hit in the head in California, see, and he's coming around real good. And Lou McKinnon in St. Paul, I was sort of favorite in St. Paul, you see. I was sort of like Teddy Lines. I was a Saturday pitcher. If they didn't win a ball game in St. Paul on a Saturday, they would have no people on a Sunday. But if they won Saturday, Lexington Park would be full. And so Lou McKinnon, he wanted me back so bad, see. And well, Vic Frazier got where he is ready to work. His head got all right and everything. And so anyway, well, I went back to St. Paul. I went back to St. Paul. And I stayed there till Branch Rickett came to St. Paul looking for a pitcher. He came down there to look at B.D. Hemsel. Now, that's what Sukeworth told me. He was a scout, too, when Branch Rickett came down.
And this was, what, 1944, was it?
About 43, I believe, 43. Okay. He came down there. And so, anyway, well, I pitched the first ball game against Kansas City, and that's when they had Pretty and Rizzo. They won the American Association, but 25 ball game. And I pitched the first ball game and beat them. And Ernie Rudolph started the second ball game, and their pitching staff was shot. And so I was the only guy that I had a pretty easy ball game, the ball game I pitched. And so anyway, Ernie Rudolph, the second inning, he hurt his arm. And we didn't have nobody to pitch, so I just went right from the dugout out there and finished the ball game. I left the ball game. We didn't win the ball game, but I done pretty good. Anyway, in the clubhouse, Branch Rickett came to the clubhouse. Boy, you never heard such a speech in all your life. Mm-hmm. I got so embarrassed. Boy, all he does is just praise me, you know. And just, did you ever hear him talk?
No.
Oh, out of this world.
Yeah.
Out of this world. He could make it feel so high and yet so low. Yet it was just... It's good, but yet I was so embarrassed, you know. Not only talking about me. And anyway, he bought me then. But he let me ride all night after that ball game. We had to ride all night and all day in Columbus, Ohio. And then they got down here, the newspapers, Brooklyn, Branch Rickey brought all here. And that's when I went back up.
Mm-hmm. And then you had a couple, you were a starter mostly with the Tigers. Would that be fair to say, or you started more than you relieved? But with Brooklyn, you were almost strictly reliever? Or?
Well, I tell you, whenever I started, I done a real good job. That's what I...
Did you have a preference, one over the other or not?
Did what?
Did you have a preference? Would you rather been a starter, or didn't make any difference?
Oh, yeah, the starters wanted to get some money back in that damn time, you know. The reliever didn't get anything. And so in 1939, we trained on the coast with the White Sox, see. And I pitched 39 scoreless innings, you see. And they all thought, oh, man, I'd make the ball club, you see. But I was the first one to let go, see.
Mm-hmm.
But you look over my record, they're starting. And the manager's always said, if you don't get that little guy in the second inning, you won't get him, see. But I was a strong little guy, and I knew how to pitch. And the guy'd say, pitch him low or high and away. When I went up to Detroit, they played you. You had to pitch. They had to pitch. They played you around. You had to pitch that way. You couldn't pitch inside, and they said pitch outside. You pitched that ball where you wasn't supposed to hit it. And then you pitch away from it. They played him where you're supposed to pitch it. Mm-hmm. That's the way they did.
I'll ask you about two things in 46 with Brooklyn. First of all, Ed Head. You were at Brooklyn through a no-hitter. Tell me about that.
Well, Ed was just super that day. Everything he done was just absolutely, seemed like, I forget who he played.
There was
like
Boston.
Boston?
Yeah, he beat Boston 5-0. It was on April the 23rd.
Boy, I tell you what. I tell you, Boston had a good ball club. Had this Berger and Siskin and Sanders. And see, they had six or seven guys could hit that ball. And boy, it's just one of those things. There's only two or three fly balls hit the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed wasn't that kind of a pitcher. But let me tell you about Boston, man. I had a no-hitter in Boston. Two men out and two strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And Gordon Gilwater to bat. And I threw him a slider inside, and he dodged from the ball and hit his bat and went on the first base for a base hit. Then I had one in Cincinnati, against Cincinnati, with mm-hmm. Brooklyn, and Grocer took me out. I pitched 8 innings, no hitter. And he took me out of that. Bases loaded, and I came to bat with two men out. DeRocher took me out for a pinch hitter. Pete Reeser went in to hit for me, and he took three. Didn't even offer to hit me.
Hmm.
The newspaper and the guys came down there. You know what DeRocher told the sport writer and all? Art asked me to take him out. His arm was gone.
It was all a lie, huh?
And like kill me. To go out there, boy, I tell you what.
Just last thing before this side of the tape is over there. Tell me about you guys tied with the Cardinals in 46, and you had a two-game playoff. Tell me about those two playoff games.
Well, we opened up in Brooklyn, St. Louis Cardinal there, the Stan the Man, Slaughter, Terry Moore, Harry Walker. Boy, what a pitch at that. Pellet, Herb Keen, Dixon, Gabler. I don't have any more.
Mm-hmm.
But the bases loaded. They had us 5-7 in Brooklyn. They had a small park in there, the right field, you know, small park. Harry Bikin went in and struck out Omo, Schultz, and Walker to save the ball game. And then we had to go to St. Louis to play. And we had the bases loaded, two men out, and they had us 2-1. And I'd get who's at bat. But anyway, they hit a ball between Terry Moore and Harry Walker. And both of them dove for the ball, and Harry Walker come up with the ball in his meat hand. We could have won one ball game in that playoff.
Mm-hmm.
Two straight, and that was all of it.